Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:34 p.m. That is Pacific time, and today is July 3rd. So the U.S. market closed a little early today. It's going to be closed tomorrow. I'll still post a comment of the day tomorrow because the rest of the world is going to be open. But I thought it was interesting today. Tesla popped on the upside because their sales are going up. Now, that's basically not that surprising. When you cut the price of an expensive item, then you create demand. That's how sales work. The bigger question is, what are they doing to their reputation? Are they going to be able to generate sales when they put the prices back up? And are consumers being conditioned to expect Tesla to cut prices whenever they have a disappointing quarter? And are they creating expectations among consumers not to have to pay top dollar? So there are both give and take to these kinds of decisions. But sales up certainly is helping the share at the moment. And then also BYD is also coming out the on the positive side of this price war that's underway. And the share has continued to hold the sequence of higher reaction lows, and it is continuing to firm from the region of the 200-day moving average. But it's not only that we're seeing companies like Tesla and BYD doing well. In South Korea, you have Kia, and the share is steadying quite clearly now from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this has been a range that's been underway for over 2.5 years. So it's an interesting environment right now. Not every automotive manufacturer is going to come out of this price war in a strong position, but we're certainly seeing more enthusiasm for these shares, and not least because they trade at reasonable valuations. So Mazda is also popping on the upside here, and Honda has been one of the stronger performers within the Japanese market. So there's definitely renewed enthusiasm around the automotive sector, but I think it is more about the valuation, where you have single-digit multiples and a reasonable yield, rather than the sudden enthusiasm that everyone is going to go out and buy a car at the same time from every one of the manufacturers. Then let's just consider what's going on in Pakistan right now. It's really been a very difficult couple of years for Pakistan. The first thing, of course, was that the USA pulled out of Afghanistan. So that was the end of a long line of subsidies for the Pakistani government. And then you've had political upheaval all just left and right, massive corruption. And then you had the storms last year that killed 1,700 people and whole areas inundated with flooding. And we're heading into the monsoon season right now. But I think it's worth considering that an awful lot of bad news has been priced in. The Global X MSCI Pakistan ETF was trading at 70 back in 2017, at 14 today. So an 80% decline is usually a sign that a lot of bad news has been priced in. And today's announcement that the IMF have thrown them a lifeline in the form of a loan is certainly something that has created some renewed enthusiasm. But it's also the fact that so much bad news has been priced in, and that the valuation has priced in a lot of that is certainly, I think, helping to create some of that renewed enthusiasm. Then the Nigerian index had popped on the upside at the end of the last quarter, and then it eased back a little, but it was in positive territory in here today. This looks like a little consolidation. Now, it's quite volatile, jumping around in about a 10% range, but the action is reasonably positive. And again, this is another market that has pulled back in an exceptionally violent manner over the course of the last decade. So, as we then think about the continued outperformance of the large companies, I think we are being given a very clear example of capitalism trending towards consolidation. and the Nasdaq 100 was in mildly positive territory in here today and coming up towards the upper side of its range. Apple, having announced that they were going to release their VR AR headset in January or like the first quarter of 2024, have subsequently come out and said that that might not actually be the case, or that they're not going to be able to create the same volume that they thought they would because of the difficulty in manufacturing them. So, not only are we talking about an already niche product, but they're already cutting back on the supply of it. That doesn't seem to be the kind of environment where they're expecting it to be a hit seller. Now, as we think then about the likelihood of what's going to do well in the second half of this year. Well, I think that considering how much the mega caps have gone up already, it's much more likely that it is the rest of the market will do well. And I think the performance of the automotive sector is an example of that, that investors are more willing to put money to work in lower valuation companies where you have the potential for at least just a return to normal rather than the clear beneficiaries of the pandemic and the subsequent, I think, hyper enthusiasm around the artificial intelligence theme. Now, let's then think about what's been going on in China. They intervened today and acted with alacrity right off the open to buy yen, excuse me, buy yuan and sell dollars. So the renminbi steadied up a little, but we can see very clearly here that this is in no way a dynamic move. So they don't want the renminbi to devalue fast, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm for arresting this decline overall. And China's in a very tight position because they can't print the money lest they reinflate the property bubble. But if they don't do lend any assistance to the property market, then they're going to be in an even more difficult position. And China Vanke came out last night and said that the underlying condition of the property market is worse than they thought it was. So the share is right back in the region of the lows. Now, China Vanke is royalty among the property developers, and it is also partially state-owned. So there's very li a low likelihood that the company is going to be allowed to go bust. But its performance is also an indication that there isn't a lot of assistance being provided. So we're still in a less benign environment overall. And perhaps that is what's also being reflected in the oil price. And despite the fact that both Russia and Saudi Arabia over the weekend came out and said that they're going to continue to restrict supply, prices having rallied in early trading reversed it. And we are now seeing a very mild downward bias to trading over the course of the last month and a succession of lower rally highs within this narrowing range. Now, these kinds of narrow ranges in a volatile instrument like oil do not last indefinitely. And when it breaks, it is going to break in a dynamic manner. And my bet is that that dynamic manner will be on the downside. I think that the surprises are going to be on the downside from the perspective of the oil market and the global demand environment. So the energy spider ETF is hovering here in the region of the 200-day moving average. On each of the occasions over the last 3 years that it has tested it, it has bounced. And now it is encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. Nobody has really experienced a lot of profit erosion. The price right now is almost exactly where it was a year ago. We've had a bit of back and forth, but the price is still hovering here. But oil prices have had a meaningful decline. Now, if oil breaks lower again, then it seems to me at least that it's very unlikely that the energy companies are going to be able to hold on to these levels. Then let's just think about a relatively low cost producer like EOG, and you get another. It's a very simple, similar picture here. where there's a succession of lower rally highs over the course of the last 8 months, and now it is encountering resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. This is not a bullish-looking chart. Then copper prices were a little steadier in here today, and we're in this environment very similar to oil, where there is a very tight market, a balance between supply and demand. There's some very vociferous arguments about whether prices are going to jump higher or decline meaningfully, but China accounts for more than half of all the demand and most of the processing of the metal. So what happens there is much more important than any of these questions around renewable energy. I saw an article over the weekend as well, where it was talking about a hailstorm in Nebraska that had completely destroyed a solar farm. And what that was just very clearly highlighting is that if you're going to try and compensate for weather volatility by investing in energy resources that are dependent on the weather, that doesn't make sense. Now, it really, I think, instead helps to highlight that the vast majority of investment in renewable energy is more about regulatory arbitrage than a clear business case. And that kind of contrived way of making investments is something that is weighing on the sector. So the solar ETF, it's hovering between the 1,000-day and the 200-day moving average. And there's obviously going to be a breakout eventually, but I just don't think that we're going to see the kind of investment in zero carbon emissions that everyone in the media seems to think is inevitable. It's obviously going to be very dependent on the willingness of governments to sponsor that kind of activity. And the carbon emissions continue to hover here. Now, the price right now is basically exactly where it was at the end of 2021. And every time it pulls back, then it catches a bid because the governments of Europe are more than willing to restrict supply in order to support the value. But these kinds of moves, they help companies in the uranium sector, and uranium was in the uranium ETF, at least, was in negative territory today, but is still holding the region of the 200-day moving average. And of course, it's also one of the primary reasons why Tesla has been able to build mega gigafactories largely at the expense of its competitors. Now, as we think then about what's happening in the currency markets, and that is very much a reflection of what's happening in the wider macro environment. The dollar index was in mildly positive territory today, but the downward bias remains intact. Where most of the speculative activity has been focused right now is in Bitcoin. And the price has popped up to test the upper side of the range. It's trading around the 31,000 level. This is has the promise, at least, of a supply and elasticity meets rising demand environment, because it is not easy to increase supply. But demand could surge in the event that one of the fund management companies gets the formulation right for the SEC to approve a spot ETF for the asset. If that happens, it's going to start accumulating assets, and then those assets will have to will very quickly buy up all of the available Bitcoin, and we could see prices moving materially higher. And Coinbase is likely to be one of the key beneficiaries there, because it's the only one of the exchange companies with sufficient heft to be able to cater to that surge in volume. But of course, that is assuming that an ETF is in fact permissioned. So it's a binary type of trade here. Either the ETF gets permissioned and it turns into a bonanza for Bitcoin and related instruments, or the ETF does not get permissioned and they continue to poo-poo the idea. And in which case, then we could anticipate that some of these miners and the Bitcoin price will decline in a meaningful fashion. So Certainly, there's quite a bit of activity going on right now, and then of course you have the broader macro environment where you continue to have the results of the failure of multiculturalism very much evident in France, where this bifurcated society has been created, and now you have trouble on the streets. Now this rise of populism and the just the opening fissure between native populations and immigrants, and the failure of integration. These are all symptoms of the wider problem of inequality, but it's also the side effect of the concentration that arises from capitalism, where you get concentration of power within the companies, concentration of wealth within a small sliver of the population. Then that eventually sows the seeds for antitrust. And it is eventually antitrust which increases the number of companies, diversifies the range of power. It doesn't necessarily mean that the people who have cash are suddenly not going to have it, but it does create a more level playing field, and usually then is associated with higher personal taxes. And that is exactly what we had in the Great Depression and the aftermath of that. And I think that it is more likely than not that is what we can anticipate will happen in the future. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.